Hello and welcome to the Shop with M podcast. In today's episode, I'll be sharing my interview with Mahanid Malis from Environmental Defense Canada. Do you know that most receipt paper that we get when we make an average purchase at places like grocery stores can be toxic and not usually recyclable? Welcome, Mahanid. Today on the show, we have Mahanid Malis with Environmental Defense Canada. Mahanid, can you start off by letting us know about yourself, the EDC, and your role at the EDC?
Yeah, for sure. My name is Mahanid Malis, and I manage the Toxics Program at Environmental Defense. So what is Environmental Defense? Well, we're a charity organization, an environmental charity, basically, that works to improve and strengthen regulations and laws that protect our health and the environment from pollution, that protect our waterways and the Great Lakes, drinking water. And also, you know, a big focus of our organization is obviously to address climate change, which is one of the, you know, major threats facing humanity today. So we do a lot of different things to achieve what, you know, the goals that we aspire to achieve, including doing research and report to educate people about, you know, the risks of things like pollution or exposure to toxic chemicals. And we also work with government and industry to improve their policies and positions on specific environmental problems.
Amazing. And your particular job revolves around, you're the toxic manager, right? So could you tell us like specifically what your role is? Like, are you testing yourself constantly against toxic things in the environment? Are you the guinea pig?
Well, sometimes, you know, part of my job is to be that guinea pig and, put myself in a testing project where, you know, if you want to better understand, you know, what happens in our body when we eat a specific meal that might be contaminated with a toxic chemical or use a product that may contain a toxic chemical, you know, scientists and researchers usually do testing. So they kind of look at, you know, what happens when a group of people, you know, drink water from a specific plastic bottle. So sometimes we do these sort of studies with volunteers, or most recently, I was one of the subjects in an experiment, which was very interesting because, you know, for the first time I was in, you know, I was the subject and also the writer and the author of the report. So it was kind of eye-opening in a different way.
That's amazing. And I'd love to kind of share with the listeners why we're doing this podcast today. So I have been collecting receipts for about 10 to 15 years. And it started off because I had a company and I just kept my receipts for tax purposes. But I started to collect receipts from everything I consumed. So going to the coffee shop, the grocery store, shopping at the mall. And I just decided the very first year I was going to keep all the receipts, tally them up, because I don't always use my credit card for everything. Sometimes it's cash, and figure out just how much I spend a year versus how much I make. And after the first year of doing that, I did that for a second year. And then slowly it just became a habit. I stopped tallying how much I spent a year, but I just kept my receipts and I rolled them up. So I'm going to actually share the picture of like 10 to 15 years worth of my personal consumption on social media. And I sent that photo to Mahanid and to Sarah, who was also one of the subjects in this particular test, because I was on the EDC's website and I saw your report on BPA and BPS in receipts and how that's very toxic. And I became appalled and I became kind of scared. And then when I kept reading the report, I went, oh my gosh, how is this allowed? How is it okay that we're consuming receipts made out of thermal paper? And I wanted to talk a little bit with you guys and kind of bring that awareness to other consumers so that they're aware of the health risks. So can you talk about that experiment? What was it and what your outcome was?
Absolutely. So what we wanted to do was, you know, specifically look at when you touch a receipt, you know, does your body kind of concentration of the specific chemical that we're concerned about in this case, so BPA, or most people are familiar with BPA because it's used in plastics, but some other chemicals that replaced BPA over the past few years that have a similar structure as BPA, and they're called BPS and BPF. So we know that those chemicals are used on
and
the receipt.
BPA
paper.
Stands for like bisphenol, what's it called?
It's bisphenol A, and BPF would be bisphenol F, BPS would be bisphenol S. So they basically belong to the bisphenol group of chemicals. And generally, because of the similar structure that they have, science shows that they might have similar impacts in our bodies. And what we know from BPA, which is probably one of the most widely studied industrial chemicals out there, you know, there are thousands of published studies that looked at BPA over the years. There's a compelling body of evidence that demonstrates that BPA is a hormone disrupting chemical. So that basically means that in our body, it mimics hormones, and that changes the balance of hormones that, you know, end up basically impacting the way the body develops. So really critical, consider when we're thinking about specific vulnerable populations like pregnant women or young children, because hormones play a crucial role in the development of the body. And the science is showing that, you know, some hormonal cancers like breast cancer and thyroid cancer are linked to exposure to hormone-disrupting chemicals like BPA. Wow. So that's sort of why we are, you know, we were concerned about exposure to BPA from receipts, because generally people think about exposure to BPA as something that happens when you eat out of a plastic container that might have BPA, or, you know, putting the plastic container in a microwave and heating, reheating your food. And then, you know, that might accelerate or increase the migration of BPA from the plastic into your food, and then that gets into your body. So we know about that, and generally people have some awareness of that. But what most people were not aware of is the fact that BPA gets into your body dermally. So basically it gets absorbed through the skin.
Can I ask you, like, does our body think that BPA is a hormone?
Basically, that's a good way of thinking about it, because there are structural similarities between estrogen and BPA. And so the way estrogen works in our body is that it's sort of the key and lock mechanism, where estrogen, you know, binds to a certain receptor on a specific cell, and then that's how it sort of activates a specific process. Now, because BPA is similar in structure or has some similarities in structure to estrogen, then it could trick the body and end up basically binding to the estrogen receptors or blocking estrogen from binding to the receptors. So that's how it sort of causes the imbalance. So it's really, you know, it's a very tricky kind of chemical when it's in our body. We also sometimes don't know exactly how it operates and at which level it could be harmful.
Whoa. So you basically, you were a test subject. So I read in your report that you did like a 2-week cleanse so that you didn't have any BPA, BPS in your body. And then you exposed yourself to it. So how did you cleanse yourself from BPA, BPS? I have to be honest. I'd love to know.
Yeah, and we thought about that a lot, and we were worried that because BPA and BPS are widely available in a lot of consumer products, we thought, you know, how can we make sure that whatever concentration of BPA or BPS that we detect after the experiment, so after we touch the receipt, is actually because we touched the receipt. So how do we control for other sources of exposure to BPA and BPS? And that's when we realized that we really had to make every effort possible to avoid exposure. So that meant, you know, eating foods that we know were not going to be contaminated with BPA. So as an example, I eat a lot of chickpeas. For a period of 2 weeks, I made sure that I avoided any canned food products, including chickpeas. And that was a good thing, because I got into the habit of cooking chickpeas from, you know, dried beans, which are, you know, much tastier and healthier. So sort of did that when it comes to food. We also thought about eating out and how eating out can be a source of exposure to BPA and BPS, because, you know, if you're eating at a restaurant, you're not really sure where the ingredients are coming from and how they're packaged. So we reduced our consumption of fast foods and, you know, eating at restaurants where we suspected that some of the main ingredients would be canned. So for example, tomato sauce, you know, we avoided eating pizza and pasta for 2 weeks, because that was, you know, there was no guarantee that the pasta sauce was not going to be made from canned tomatoes.
Yeah, of course.
And we also avoided touching
tomatoes and making their own sauce.
Exactly. And I remember my colleague Sarah, I think one time, even spoke or called the restaurant ahead of time to ask just to make sure, you know, whether they use canned foods or not. So that was, it was a challenging process, and it highlighted to us how difficult it is to completely avoid exposure. But we managed to do it. We managed to bring down our levels of BPA to non-detect, which meant that the lab wasn't able to detect any levels of BPA. Now, it doesn't mean that it was, you know, that level was zero, but it just means that it was so low that the lab methods couldn't detect it. And for BPS, we brought it down to a very small level that was sort of insignificant.
How'd you then expose yourself to BPA and BPS?
basically wanted to look at regular kind of exposure that happens. What we wanted to try to imitate is the usual kind of common practice of holding a receipt or touching it. And specifically, we were thinking about people who work with receipts a lot, so cashiers in this case, because in 1 or 2 minutes, they're handling a couple of receipts on a busy day at a grocery store. So basically, we sat down and we collected receipts over a few weeks, and then we touched those receipts for, I think, about 17 or 18 minutes, because we wanted to try, as I said, to replicate the duration of exposure that a cashier in a shift basically at a grocery store where a cashier is handling receipts. So basically 18 or 17 minutes is the duration of time based on the conversations that we had with some cashiers would be the total exposure duration. So we sat down and, as I said, for 17, 18 minutes, we just touched the receipts. And then a few hours later, we took a urine sample and sent it to the lab and we got our test back and we, you know, were quite shocked.
Wait, so you didn't eat any canned foods? All you did was just touch receipts? There was no other exposure to BPA and BPS? I thought there were
none at all.
It's crazy. Their levels went up just from exposing themselves to receipts and no other forms of exposure like canned foods. The EDC focused on how long cashiers spend with receipts in this study. But can you think of any other jobs that require a lot of exposure? Bank tellers, accountants, and bookkeepers, perhaps? And I can't help but think about other forms of consumer exposure to toxic receipts. I mean, what about tax season?
I read in the report that one of your other people that was a guinea pig, they used hand sanitizer apparently before touching receipts, and his levels were way higher than everybody else's. Why was that?
That was very surprising, but it basically, we read a study that showed that cashiers who use hand sanitizer before, you know, holding a receipt or throughout their shift are more likely to have a higher level of BPA or BPS in their body, because somehow the hand sanitizer acts as sort of an agent that increases the absorption rate. So because you have the hand sanitizer on your hand, it helps the BPA to get through your skin more quickly and more easily. So we wanted to test that. And we knew that, you know, it's not really something that, because we only had one person do that, we can't really say conclusively that, you know, if you use hand sanitizer and touch a receipt, your exposure is going to go up by this much. But what we can say is that we observed that the person who used the hand sanitizer had the highest level of BPA and BPS, and that's in line with what one scientific study actually concluded.
How much higher were the levels?
I'm not looking at the data right in front of me right now, but it was significant. It was, you know, I think compared to another subject, it was more than double the level of BPA that was detected in that other subject.
Rick was his name, right?
That's right.
Okay. BPS levels before and after the experiment. Before was 0.75 for him. After was 86.55 for BPS. BPA before was ND. After was 42.04. And yours was 8.32. So yeah.
More than double. It's a lot more than double. Right.
Holy cannoli. Okay. That's insane. All right. Well, what the heck? I don't like, so I was reading this and then I read a CTV news report that they kind of got your report and then they interviewed a bunch of other folks about it. And I guess they sent the report to Health Canada. And Health Canada's response for me was very shocking. And I wanted to ask you why you think they said this. So I'd love to read it if you don't mind. They said, at this time, Health Canada has not concluded that BPA in thermal receipt paper is a significant source of exposure for the general population. The statement read, currently, there are no plans to ban the use of BPA in bisphenol S, BPS, on receipts. It's important for Canadians to understand that just because a chemical may be detected in our bodies, it does not necessarily mean it is causing harm. And then the statement added that Health Canada also continues to assess new research on BPA and BPS, and if necessary, will not hesitate to take appropriate action to protect the health and safety of Canadians. I was surprised by that, and I get that it's maybe a little bit complicated and they have to do a bunch of tests, but you guys did. And in your report, you also mentioned that the European Union has already taken actions to ban BPA. And when are they doing the ban as of? Isn't it as of 2020?
That's correct.
So why do you think we're so behind in Canada?
I'm glad that you read the statement and then immediately, you know, thought about how inconsistent that statement is with the European Union's position on the issue. So in the EU, they decided to ban BPA from receipts specifically because their studies showed the risk for cashiers and people that handle receipts frequently. So people who are basically exposed to BPA from receipt, you know, more than what's considered an average exposure, right? But if you think about the role of a cashier in France or in the UK or in Canada or any other place in the world, it's, you know, basically the same, right? It involves, you know, cashing out customers, handling the receipt, giving it to them, taking it back, and then maybe organizing your receipts in a specific file and then taking them back to the office at the end of the day. So somehow the Europeans are saying that this risk is too great for us to continue to allow BPA on receipts. And if we want to protect cashiers and we want to protect the population, you know, we're compelled to ban it. But then on the other hand, you have Health Canada, which states that BPA does not pose an unacceptable risk to, and this is the key word here, the magic word, to the average population or the average person. So what Health Canada is saying is, on average, you know, a regular person who's handling a receipt
when you go to the grocery store, once a day or something. Okay, I get you.
Exactly. He's not exposed to levels that Health Canada deems to be unsafe. However, Health Canada has never actually looked at exposures in cashiers or other workers who handle receipts frequently. And so they've actually never even studied BPS. They haven't done the assessments and the studies that they need to do in order for them to make a conclusion about the safety or risk for people like cashiers.
So just so consumers and listeners are aware, BPA, BPS, BPF, you've explained to me in the past that, I'm going to say it wrong, bisphenol? Bisphenol, what industry does, this is my interpretation, please let me know if I'm wrong. What industry does is they'll create different chemical formulations of a similar thing just so that they can continue to still use it. So if, let's say, BPA is banned or there's like health concerns against BPA, industry will then create like a BPS, BPF, BPM. I'm just making this up. Is that true?
That's very accurate. Yes, it's basically a strategy that we've seen, you know, used by industry for many, many years. And it's not just, you know, on the group of bisphenols like BPA, but on so many other chemicals, like, you know, one that I think many people would be familiar with is Teflon. So Teflon, you know, 20 years ago discovered that there was a chemical used in the Teflon formulation, and Teflon makes pots and pans nonstick, and obviously, you know, very popular because they're convenient. But that chemical was shown to actually cause cancer, and it's been banned in Canada. It's been banned in many places around the world, and industry phased out the use of that chemical. But Teflon continues to exist. So how did they continue to use this technology after phasing out a chemical? Well, what they did was they created similar chemicals that offer a similar function, right? And those chemicals are now, you know, have replaced the chemicals that, you know, have bad rep, basically, the kind of chemicals that people want to avoid, like BPA, because everyone knows about it. You know, over time, we've seen those substitutes, you know, many of them, not just one type, you know, not just BPS, but as you said, BPS and BPF and many others. And those are used in different products, and it makes it more challenging and more difficult for government to assess them and regulate them, because the way the chemical system works is a chemical is innocent until proven guilty. So initially, the chemical is used, and then once there's enough evidence that it's harmful, then the government steps in and bans it. Created a system where we have a backlog of chemicals that we've never looked at, and in some cases, chemicals that we don't even know about, because Canada is a big, you know, importing country. We get a lot of consumer products from outside of Canada, and the chemicals that are used in those consumer products, the government has no clue, you know, what they're even called sometimes. So that's been a strategy used by the industry to just get around regulations and be able to continue to sell and put specific chemicals into product and continue to maintain their profit margin.
And also patenting those chemicals too, right? Like the formulation of the chemicals, because that's one thing that I've stopped using is perfume and fragrance products. So anything where the ingredient says perfume or fragrance, I have been staying far away from, because a company can literally just create whatever their formulation is, and it can be made out of synthetic or contain synthetic chemicals in it, not be 100% natural. And you don't necessarily know what you're absorbing through your skin. And I guess in some ways also ingesting. So if it's like, I guess your cookware, you're ingesting it through the food you're eating in a sense too, right?
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
And there's a big culture of hiding information about you know, the industry does studies and assesses the safety of their chemicals, you know, not to the extent I think they could be doing a lot more, but a lot of the research and a lot of the information about the chemical and its structure and its hazard profile are not shared publicly. A lot of them are maintained, basically what they call it confidential business information. So it just creates this, you know, big black box of information that only the industry and sometimes governments can access, but leaves everyone else in the dark about what kind of chemicals are being used.
Oh, that's so scary. Okay, well, let's talk about something positive. And I know we only have you for a couple more minutes. What can people do to basically limit their exposure to BPA, BPS, BPF, BP, Z or Z if you're an American? You know, what can you do?
Yeah, I think the easiest thing that anyone can do is to basically say no to a receipt or a product that may contain BPA or one of its alternatives like BPS. So if you're, you know, buying groceries and you don't need the receipt, you can tell the cashier to not print a receipt. Unfortunately, in most grocery stores and big department stores and convenience stores, the, you know, it's an automatic kind of printing process. So you may be able to limit your exposure by not taking a receipt, but the cashier is still handling that receipt and probably getting a dose of BPA when they touch that receipt. So that would be the sort of the one kind of obvious kind of tip. And in addition to that, we know that BPA and BPS are usually added to things like food cans and to polycarbonate plastic products. So plastic containers that are reusable contain BPA or one of its alternatives. Food cans contain BPA or perhaps an alternative to BPA on the inner lining of the can. So there's some sort of plastic resin that lines the can on the inside to protect the food from the metal.
And don't eat canned food.
We have evidence
that... Possible. Like, avoid canned food. Just like a personal thing on my end. My mom always trained me this way too. Like, just stay away from canned food if you can.
Yeah, and that's one way. But, you know, another way is to look for food cans that don't use BPA and that disclose to the customer what kind of resin is being used. And we know that there is a type of resin that is plant-based. Some companies have already started using. So sort of thinking about, you know, what are the sources of exposure and, you know, what are the alternative products that I can buy that don't contain BPA. So if you're buying a food container, maybe choose a stainless steel container instead of a plastic container. And if you're buying a food can of some sort, you know, choose a company or a brand that has removed BPA and used a safer resin.
But couldn't they say BPA free, but it still has a BPS or a BPF?
That's true. So the label doesn't always give you the full picture. So when you hear or read the terms BPA free, that doesn't mean that it's, you know, toxic free or that it's bisphenol free. It just means that this product doesn't have added BPA, but it could
that
have something else.
Particular bisphenol. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. In fact, most companies that we spoke to, most retailers that we spoke to, had no idea that their receipts contained BPS. Because a lot of them, when we reached out to them for comment, said, well, we, you know, many years ago moved away from receipts that contain BPA and our supplier says it's BPA free. But then when our study came out, you know, they went back to their supplier and they said, hey, we heard about this thing BPS and we heard that it's on receipts. Does our receipt paper contain BPS? And the answer in most cases was yes.
Wow.
So even though the supplier promoted, and you can go online and check, you know, the products that are sold by some of these suppliers, and you would find, you know, a BPA-free thermal paper roll listed on their website, but it doesn't mean that it's free of bisphenols. It just means that it doesn't have BPA and most likely it's going to contain BPS.
So have you seen a change since you've released the report?
We certainly have. And I think, you know, this is the good news that I would like to share with your listeners is that while we have not seen the greatest response from Health Canada, we have seen the retail sector quickly taking steps to explore other options that don't contain BPA or BPS. In the fall of 2019, Costco Canada actually made an announcement that they will be phasing out all of the receipts that contain BPA or BPS, so bisphenol-based receipts, by the end of the year. And as of the new year, so as of this month, their receipts should not contain any bisphenols.
Cool.
For other retailers, yes. You know, we were hoping for quicker commitments and more sort of concrete timelines. But, you know, what I can share is that retailers that I spoke to have already started a process of looking at, you know, other options, as I said, and hopefully in the near future, they will be moving away from receipts that contain bisphenols. And just the last thing I would add is that because of the campaign that we had on receipts and the study that we published, the demand for bisphenol-free receipts increased so much that companies that make receipt paper are now considering and looking into increasing their production of receipts that don't contain bisphenols. And there was actually a new type of receipt paper that was developed recently that we might be seeing coming to Canada soon. So hopefully in 2020, we will see a lot more, you know, concrete action by retailers or types of receipt paper that will not contain bisphenols.
Awesome. And I also want to share with the listeners that along with the release of this podcast, I'm going to share on social media a post of basically my receipt, you know, rows of shame. And on that social media post, you're welcome to tag any of your local grocery stores or retailers or any place where you get receipts. Just tag them simply and ask them to go to e-receipts. Because honestly, I don't even feel like we need to have physical pieces of paper anymore, especially when they're not easily recyclable. Like when I was trying to get rid of all of my receipts, I called my local city and they informed me that they actually don't recycle receipt paper, which is awful. And then I called my neighboring city, which is much larger than my local area. And they said that they can recycle receipts because they have the proper equipment to do so. But, you know, most people don't live in such large cities, and maybe some large cities don't even have the proper equipment. There's so many different levels. And if we just get rid of them all together, in my opinion, it would be so much greater to just have receipts emailed to you. And a lot of big retailers are kind of sort of starting to do that now, but so many are still behind. In this day and age, I feel like there really isn't any excuse anymore. So it would be good to go straight to email, don't you think?
I think you're spot on. I think we, you know, by eliminating receipts paper, we're, you know, also addressing another issue, which is the resources that go into making that paper, in addition to the toxic chemicals that coat the paper. So, you know, we'd be solving two problems at once. And the electronic receipt model is a great model, which I think might take a while for companies to completely switch to. But in the meantime, you know, what we're telling companies like Loblaw and Sobeys and, you know, the big retailers, including Walmart and Canadian Tire, until you switch to e-receipts completely, you must have paper that is non-toxic to protect workers and consumers. That's really the key message here.
Yeah. And if consumers are the ones asking for e-receipts, I'm pretty sure their process is going to happen quicker than normal. So,
exactly.
We have so much power.
Have a lot of power, and they should leverage that.
We can get it done by next month if we really wanted to. It's possible. Okay, well, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. And hopefully we do it again soon for some other reason.
Sounds good. Yeah, feel free to reach out when you want to chat about another topic.
Okay, sounds perfect. Thank you, Mohanad.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Shop with M is a sustainable living digital platform created for you, the socially conscious consumers of the world. Our platform consists of a free mobile app, website, podcast, and documentary series that all center around our company's core values, which we call the 5 factors for sustainable consumption: impact on human health, environmental impact, respect for human rights, respect for animal rights, and last but not least, socioeconomic advantage, because we want brands and businesses who have true sustainable practices to succeed and for society to support that. The purpose of the free Shop With Them app is to connect you with sustainable brands and businesses worldwide. Use the app to find local retail shops, grocery stores, cafe restaurants, salon spas, event venues, eco hotels, eco tours, and even eco service providers like makeup artists and dog groomers. Our app was created to make sustainable living easy for you. Use it at home and while you travel to live a life in line with your core values. And of course, to hashtag shop local. The app is available, again, for free on both Apple and Android devices. Have a story idea or suggestions for future guests for our podcast? Visit our website at www.shopwithm.com to submit an idea, or email us at podcast@shopwithm.com. Just a note that we are a non-judgmental community. It is our belief that no one is perfect, but if we all do our part to consume more sustainably, there will naturally be a positive ripple effect worldwide. Our hope is that the app and our platform helps to positively impact your health, the environment, and all living beings. On a legal note, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are that of the guest and do not necessarily reflect that of Mangla Bansal, Tell Your Story Productions Incorporated, and its subsidiaries, affiliates, and associated companies, together with all respective officers, directors, and employees thereof. Thank you for being such an important part of our community. The love enlighten me salutes the love enlighten you. See you next time.